जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय जय चैतन्य जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय जय चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaita Acharya. And all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami has written the biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And all of our acharyas, accept Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita as the most authorized book of the philosophy and pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the, you could say, founder of the Hare Krishna movement. So, for us to understand Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very important. It is crucial for our spiritual development. We have heard that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared 5,000 years ago. And he gave instructions in the Bhagavad Gita, concluding with, Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhya ji mam namaskuru. Manmana means always think of me, is Krishna. Mad bhakta, become Krishna's devotee. Madhya ji, worship Krishna. And mam namaskuru, offer obeisances to Krishna. And the next verse, Sarva Dharman Pratyajya Mamekam Saranam Vraja. I'll give up all varieties of religiousness and just surrender unto Krishna. So this was the conclusion of Lord Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. But Lord Krishna considered that I have instructed people to become my devotees, to surrender unto me, but I have not shown them how to do it. And so Krishna came again as Lord Chaitanya to show us how to always think of Krishna, how to be Krishna's devotee, how to worship Krishna, how to surrender to Krishna. And because he is Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the method that he has given us is the most authorized. But although he was Krishna himself, he covered his identity so carefully that hardly anyone could recognize him as Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada told me on a morning walk that even if you don't understand that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but if you just study his character as a devotee, as a sannyasi, you will become perfect. So, as most of you know, Krishna appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the full moon night of the month of Phalgun, which we celebrate as Gaur Purnima. And his pastimes are divided into three sections. For the first 24 years, he lived in Navadvip Dham. Then, for the next 6 years, he traveled throughout India. And then for the final 18 years, he remained in Jagannath Puri. So that first section is called Adi Lila, then Madhya Lila, and then Antya Lila. So, at the end of 24 years, he accepted the renounced order of sannyas, left his affectionate mother and beautiful, chaste wife, and traveled to Jagannath Puri. And Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, but in the mood of Radharani. He's showing us how to be devotees, but he accepted the mood of the greatest devotee, of the best devotee of Srimati Radharani. Specifically, in her mood of separation from Krishna, after Krishna left Vrindavan. So on his way to Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya was absorbed in the mood of Srimati Radharani in separation from Krishna. And as he approached the Jagannath temple, he became so ecstatic, so eager to meet his beloved Lord, Krishna, that he ran. He left all the other members of his party behind and ran to the Jagannath temple. He came inside the temple, and when he saw the deity of Lord Jagannath, he became stunned. He felt, now I have finally regained the Lord of my life. And he went into a swoon and he fainted on the floor. The same Jagannath. But he was not seeing Jagannath as a deity made of wood with paint. He was seeing Krishna, Shamsundar. And he went into such a deep state of internal ecstasy that it looked as if he was dead. There were no signs of life. But then they brought a cotton swab and held it under his nostrils. They saw just a slight movement of air. And then they concluded that he was alive. So at that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the chief pundit or scholar of King Prataparudra, and a very great logician and scholar of scripture. So he understood that this person is in a very, very deep state of ecstasy, uncommon, extraordinary. So he had the body removed to his home, and eventually Nityananda Prabhu and the others reached the Jagannath temple. They received the news and so on. Now, I'm going to focus on the discussion between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first with his brother-in-law and then later with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His brother-in-law was Gopinath Acharya. He was married to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's sister. Sometimes we also might have difficulty explaining Krishna consciousness to our relatives and in-laws. So the same thing was there 500 years ago. On a very learned and scholarly level, but the same thing, that difference of understanding was there. But it's very instructive to us how Gopinath Acharya dealt with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's misunderstanding. So I'll read some verses. Text 67, yes, this is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 6, The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Text 67. So, Gopinath Acharya took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home and kept him as a guest in his home. And the next day, Gopinath Acharya took Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to see the early rising of Lord Jagannath. He then took Mukunda Dutta with him and went to Sarvabhauma's house. When they arrived, Sarvabhauma addressed Mukunda Dutta as follows. Quote, "The sannyasi is very meek and humble by nature, and his person is very beautiful to see. Consequently, my affection for him increases. From which sampradaya has he accepted the sannyas order, and what is his name?" Gopinath Acharya replied, "The Lord's name is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and his sannyas preceptor is the greatly fortunate Keshava Bharati." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Sri Krishna is a very good name, but he belongs to the Bharati community. Therefore, he is a second-class sannyasi." Poor fellow. Gopinath Acharya replied, "Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not rely on any external formality. There is no need for him to accept the sannyas order from a superior sampradaya. The Bhattacharya inquired, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in his full-fledged youthful life. How can he keep the principles of sannyas? I shall continually recite Vedanta philosophy before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that he may remain fixed in his renunciation and thus enter upon the path of monism. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was illusioned, although supposedly learned and intelligent. And like most people in pretty much any religious tradition, he was an impersonalist. He thought that God is impersonal and that the goal of life is for the individual soul to merge and become one with the Supreme Soul. And the Mayavadis have the slogan Brahma Satya Jagan Mitya, that Brahma spirit is real and the universe or the world is false. Now the implications of this misunderstanding are profound, because if this world is false, then what is our relationship with it? Our relationship with it is to avoid it. Anyway, there's so many fallacies in this philosophy. But our reply, the Vaishnava's reply, is that if Krishna is the truth, Param Brahma, Param Satya, then whatever emanates from Krishna is also true. The material energy is temporary, but it's not false. It's true, but it's temporary. I can speak like this with great clarity and conviction by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, before I met Srila Prabhupada, I was also filled with impersonal conceptions, because I was also seeking the truth, and most of what was available in the marketplace was impersonal. The first time I visited my parents' home after meeting Srila Prabhupada and learning something of Krishna consciousness, they thought I was crazy. Of course, they thought I was crazy. And so they arranged for me to have a visit with my uncle. He wasn't a blood relative, but he was like an uncle. We used to call him Uncle Bernie. Uncle Bernie was a psychiatrist. he had a huge mansion in Highland Park part of his mansion was his office, and just like the plush sofas and chairs and tables, and very dignified. So I had learned a little, but not that much. So, you know, he started talking very, very friendly, you know, I guess to make me feel comfortable. And so then, you know, we started to get into philosophy. And I said that everything is one, because in a way it is. On an atomic level, everything is atoms. And anyway, our philosophy is Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, simultaneously one and different. And at that stage, I was a little more preoccupied with the oneness, rather than the difference. So I said, everything is one. He said, what do you mean everything is one? There's, you know, okay, there's the sofa, there's the floor, there's the table, there's the ashtray. In those days, people used to smoke a lot of this. So, I mean, they're all different. What do you mean they're all one? So I gave my explanation. So he said, so do you mean to say that if I'm smoking a cigarette and I flick the ashes on the carpet, it's the same as flicking them into the ashtray? And I said yes. Because I was, you know, I had to defend my position. And he said, what nonsense. And he was right. He was right. I mean, now in this august association, I'm thinking of a pastime with Lord Chaitanya as a child, when he was eating dirt and saying there's no difference between dirt and food, because the food is just a transformation of the earth. And then his mother educated him in the right understanding, and he accepted her superior explanation. So this misunderstanding is very common. It's everywhere, practically. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being so high in society, in knowledge, learning, logic, he was no different. But he was very articulate and knew many verses. So his idea was that he will speak Vedanta. Now this is another thing, Vedanta. Veda means knowledge, and Anta means end, like the end of knowledge. The actual end of knowledge is Krishna. Vedaishta sarvair aham eva vedyo. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. Vedanta Krit. And Krishna says, I compiled the Vedanta. He compiled it in his incarnation of Vyasadeva, Vedanta Krit Veda Vit, and I know the Vedas. So whatever Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is Vedanta and Veda, the essence of the Vedas. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya didn't know that. He thought Vedanta means impersonal monism. And he asked to, like, speak this philosophy to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so he won't be misled by the illusory attractions of Maya, and he'll avoid the temptations that could beset a young, handsome young sannyasi. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then suggested, if Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like, I could bring him into a first class sampradaya by offering him saffron cloth and performing the reformatory process again. I mean, now there's another point here. One is that he is in complete illusion about the identity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in his own way, ignorant way, but in his own way, he's a well-wisher of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants to actually help him, which is to his credit. Gopinath Acharya and Mukunda Dutta became very unhappy when they heard this. Gopinath Acharya therefore addressed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya as follows. My dear Bhattacharya, you do not know the greatness of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are found in him to the highest degree. So then there's a discussion, because in scripture the Lord is called Triyuga, which means that he appears only in three ages, Sattva Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga. And so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, having some knowledge of the scriptures, thought, he can't be Krishna, because Krishna doesn't appear in Kali Yuga. He's Triyuga, he only appears in three ages. But there are many references in Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata and other scriptures to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in Prahlad's prayers to Nrisimhadeva, he says that the Lord appears in Kali Yuga as a Channa avatar. Means a covered incarnation. He's Krishna, but his identity is covered. He's playing the part of a devotee. It's also covered with the luster of and mood of Srimati Radharani. And therefore he is known as Triyuga. Not that he doesn't come in Kali Yuga, but he comes in a covered form. And there are many other verses which we need not discuss now. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his disciples, he had many disciples, were not convinced. And Gopinathacharya said that actually no one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead except by the Lord's mercy. This is a statement of Lord Brahma, the first created being in the universe, the most intelligent being in the universe. After he was bewildered by Krishna's human-like childhood pastimes, he said that one can know the Lord only by the mercy of the Lord. And Gopinathacharya told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that when you receive the Lord's mercy, then you will understand the truth of what I am saying. So it was It was a little tense. But they were cultured. It wasn't like a shouting match like in other traditions. But it was tense. And later, Gopinathacharya and Mukunda Dutta presented the whole conversation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he's like my father, he's my affectionate well-wisher, he's trying to do good for me. So he he took the good side. So, okay, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took him, sat him down and began speaking Vedanta philosophy. One day passed, second day, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just silently listening. So, the Bhattacharya said, I have been speaking for 6 days and you have not said one word. Is it that you are unable to understand the Vedanta philosophy? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, I can understand the verses of the Vedanta very easily, but it's your commentary that I can't understand. He said, you can understand the verses, but my commentary, which is meant to explain the verses, you can't understand? So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained the real understanding of Vedanta, that Krishna is the ultimate goal. And by his mercy, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya got it. He understood. He understood Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he understood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna. So this is also another instruction for us when we preach. Especially to you know, big people who are proud and that we might have to listen to them speak nonsense for a while. But if we listen patiently, then eventually they'll ask us, well, what do you think? And then we get our chance. We know how clear Srila Prabhupada was in his preaching, following his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. No compromise. This is the truth and this is false. There's no equivocation. And I was listening to a conversation, a recorded conversation of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, basically saying that if people just understand they're not the body, then everything else follows. If they understand they're not the body, but the soul within the body, then it comes what happens to the soul after it leaves the body. What is its destination? So then the question comes, okay, how do I get a good destination? So then it comes pious activities, sinful activities, transcendental activities. The whole philosophy comes. It follows just from that one point that you're not the body but the soul within the body. So, about maybe 2 months ago, my brother-in-law's parents came up from San Diego to Santa Barbara. And my sister phoned me and said, you know, they've come up, my husband and I will be busy for the afternoon and evening, so why don't you come and spend some time with them? So I thought, okay, you know, I knew them. They're nice people, pious people, Christians. And I thought, okay, I'll come for a half hour. So this talk was in my mind. And they're old. I think the father is like 92 and the wife was 88. They're old. I was thinking, I have to convey this information to them. It's like they're approaching the end. Yeah, they're approaching the end. And if they don't hear it from me, they may never hear it and just die in ignorance, like cats and dogs. So, they're very nice. It's very pleasant and congenial. And I just wasn't getting the opportunity to bring up that point. I said, I could see how old age was having its effect on them. I mean, I feel it in myself, and I've still got a couple of decades to reach that age. And yeah, they certainly agreed on that point, that there's a lot of problems with old age. And it's like a machine. It's like it's growing old. It's sort of falling apart, and you try to fix it, and you have to spend more time fixing it. And then when you fix it, you don't like completely fix it, and then it breaks again, or another part goes, and you're constantly juggling with this machine that's falling apart. They all agreed with that. But that they're not the body, that they're something else, I couldn't figure out how to bring that in. So time was passing, and it seemed hopeless. I mean, it seemed hopeless. And I started to question myself, condemn myself, question myself. Why don't you come out and say it? Why don't you just say you're not this body? You're not this machine that's breaking apart. But I just wasn't sure how they would take it. And, my sister is very sensitive to the point of me proselytizing. Because after I first joined the movement, I thought I was just sharing the best thing that ever happened to me. That's what I thought I was doing. But then years later, I started hearing that the family was taking it, that I was proselytizing. So I knew this was a very sensitive point. And so then I was thinking, okay, what if I say it, and what if they don't like it? And then what if they tell my sister and brother-in-law that I was trying to convert them and make them Hare Krishnas? But then I thought, well, so what? No, I was thinking, all right, well, what if they do? What if they do? I mean, this is the only chance they may ever get. And is it that I just want to be, it's like I want society, friendship, and love, right? And I know that possible scenario, We wanted you to spend some time with them. We didn't want you to, preach to them, and, we can't trust you, But I think, but why should that bother me? Am I just like attached to mundane popularity? So I was like, really? And the time was passing. And so then the wife says, you believe in reincarnation, don't you? I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. She said, you know, For a long time I never thought it was possible, but I've been thinking about it a little recently. How did you come to believe in it? And then it was exactly like Prabhupada said. It's like, you know, the soul, transmigration of the soul, pious activities, sinful activities, transcendental activities, cycle of birth and death, liberation from birth and death. And it was amazing. And they were very receptive. They were very receptive. And but then when I explained what it takes to like go back to Godhead, she said, oh, I don't know if I can make it in this life. I might have to come back again. So I said, well, you can make it. You can make it. It's never too late. But, you know, you have to make an effort. You know, you definitely have to make some adjustments. But whatever you do is to your permanent credit. So even if you make advancement of 1% of this life, in the next life you'll begin from 2%. Everything else you'll lose. Like she's actually had a PhD, maybe even two. So, you know, you might have a PhD, but when you take birth in your next life, you start in nursery school. It's all lost. Or you may have so many $100,000 or more, I don't know, in this life, but when you take birth, you don't have anything. So all those things are lost, but your spiritual advancement, that stays with you. And you can continue from where you left off in the next life. So it was very nice. I mean, and at the end, and then my, anyway, I'll go into too many details, but they took it very, very seriously. And, you know, she's saying, like, I'm so old, I can't do that much. But I was saying, you know what you're doing now? That asking questions about God and hearing about God, that's also counts as service. That's the first service, shravanam, hearing. So it's not that you have to do physical service. But even hearing about God, inquiring about God, learning about God, that is also service. So it was nice. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he listened. And eventually Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya inquired, and he got the chance to speak. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became a devotee. He became a Vaishnav, and the word spread all over Jagannath Puri because he was such a big person. And so that called attention to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Gopinath Acharya said to him, what I predicted, it came true. He said, yes, it did. And he became so humble. He was so proud. He became so humble, and he was so grateful and appreciative of Gopinath Acharya, and is so staunch. He became such a staunch devotee. And he read a verse to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from the 10th canto, wonderful verse, Tate Nukampam Susamikshamana. The meaning of the verse is that um, when Krishna, when a devotee faces reversals in life and takes them as reactions to his past misdeeds and tolerates the effects and increases his service to the Lord with body, words, and mind, that person earns the right to enter the kingdom of God, just like a child earns an inheritance from his or her parents. And Srila Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, says that just like a good son or daughter need do nothing but remain alive in order to collect the inheritance, so all the devotee has to do is remain alive in Krishna consciousness, and he or she will inherit the kingdom of God. And remain alive basically means to stay in the association of devotees and chant and hear about Krishna. That much, to stay alive in Krishna consciousness. So, the last line of that verse is Mukti Pade Sadaya Bhak. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he recited the verse to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't like that word mukti, which means liberation. Generally, people take liberation to mean merging, that impersonal merging and becoming one. So he changed it to Bhakti Pade, from Mukti Pade to Bhakti Pade. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with his explanation of the verse, his appreciation of the verse. He said, but you've changed one word. You've changed mukti to bhakti. And he said, oh, I don't want to even hear that word mukti. Well, mukti pade means, pad means foot. You know, it's a name of Krishna. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained there's different kinds of mukti. I mean, the impersonal liberation, the merging type, is just one. That devotees don't. Yeah. Kaivalya Narakayate. Prabodhananda Saraswati says, I would rather... I mean, that mukti, Kaivalya, it's hellish. No, it's hellish. But there are other kinds of liberation, four other kinds, where the devotee can live on the same planet as the Lord, Salokya, or live close to the Lord, have the same bodily features as the Lord, and have the same opulence as the Lord. And those are personal. And although a devotee doesn't desire them, he just wants to serve the Lord. But if the Lord wants him to accept one of those kinds of liberation, he can accept them in the mode of service. That in that situation, he can serve the Lord. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, yeah, he became a wonderful devotee. He composed beautiful verses about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. And these two beautiful verses he wrote on a palm leaf. They didn't have pen and paper like we have. And so I think Mukunda Datta, so he gave it the palm leaf to Mukunda Datta to deliver to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Mukunda Datta very intelligently wrote the verses, the two verses, on the wall of the house. And then he gave Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the two palm leaves with the verses on them. And what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? Because in those verses, he basically says that Krishna has come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga, to teach knowledge and detachment from anything that does not foster Krishna consciousness, and devotional service, Bhakti Yoga, to himself, to Krishna. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the palm leaves and tore it up into pieces because he was playing the part of a devotee. And he didn't want to be called Krishna. But Mukunda Datta had written the verses on the wall. And all the devotees memorized those verses and kept them in their hearts as a beautiful glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna, who came to teach Bhakti Yoga, and as a testimony to how a hard-hearted, dry logician can be changed into an ecstatic devotee by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we are so blessed. I mean, such a learned scholar, so austere, such a great logician. But he was confused because he didn't have the association that we have. We're like ordinary people. I mean, very ordinary. But we have been brought into these very confidential mysteries really by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, representing the parampara coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we cannot imagine how fortunate we are. I mean, there are so many people roaming here and there in Laguna Beach and everywhere. But how many can understand Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Just very few. And this is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it is our duty, it is our sacred mission to share our good fortune with others. That is also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. And one verse that comes to mind, Amar Agyai Guru Hai Tare Desh. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, on my order, become a guru. How? Yare deke tarikaha Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, repeat the message of Krishna. It's very easy. Just repeat the message of Krishna. One of Srila Prabhupada's secretaries, Shamsundar Prabhu, and his wife Malati Dasi, they had a child named Saraswati, who when we were in India then was like 3 years old, 4 years old. And we had an apartment. It was our temple in central Bombay in a very posh neighborhood in a very, you know, sort of exclusive high-rise apartment building. And these very aristocratic men would come to the apartment to meet Srila Prabhupada. And Saraswati would run up to them and say, "Do you know who is Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And she was preaching. Prabhupada said, "This is preaching. You just repeat. You just repeat what you've heard from authorities, and it's perfect." She would do that, even in big Pandal programs with thousands of people. Pandal was like a big tent. And, she would just repeat what she heard, and because she repeated exactly what she heard, what she said was perfect. So that is all we have to do. We just repeat. We don't add anything. We don't subtract anything. We just repeat. But we should also follow, because otherwise, I mean, it can help to repeat the message without following, but it really works better if you follow. Sometimes I tell the story of Mahatma Gandhi. A mother brought her child to him and said, my child is too fond of eating sweets, and it's really ruining its health. And so please tell him not to eat sweets." So Gandhiji said, "All right, come back in 2 weeks." So the mother brought the child back in 2 weeks, and Gandhiji said, "Don't eat sweets. They're not good for you." So the mother said, "Well, that's what I asked you to do 2 weeks ago. Why didn't you say it then?" He said, "Well, 2 weeks ago I was eating sweets myself." So how could I tell him not to do something that I was doing? So that is definitely preferable. But that's also not difficult to, you know, become Krishna's devotee, because it's a very lively, relishable life. Just chanting, dancing, feasting and philosophy. I'll end with one story. It will probably raise more questions than it will answer. But Srila Prabhupada had a disciple who was sort of introducing Krishna consciousness to an audience in Prabhupada's presence. And he was saying Krishna consciousness is just chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophy, and a little work. And Prabhupada said, "No. No work." So then the disciple resumed his introductory. "Is this chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophy, and a little bit of work?" And Prabhupada said, "No. No work." So there's a purport to that. There's always a purport. But let us, so you don't get the wrong idea, let us just say that there's a difference between work and devotional service. And so if we're in that position, we have a husband, wife, children, we have to maintain the family so we can be Krishna conscious, maintain our Krishna conscious lifestyle within Grihastha Ashram. So you can work, there's no prohibition. But if it's done in the right spirit, it's not really work, it's service. It's part of the process of devotional service. But if you can, if you're like very intelligent, like Sheshika Prabhu and others, you can figure out a way to get money without working. And that is really good. That's the best. If you have any questions about that, you can ask him. But anyway, I am very pleased to be in the association of all of you on this auspicious occasion. And I guess we take a few questions and then I will... Yes?
I know I should ask a philosophical question, and I think others will. But just because it was such a nice story, and informative, you know, enlivening as well, I want to know if the word got back to your sister and what she said.
Yes. Well... just sort of I think it was good timing because I was just leaving. I thought it'd be good if I leave before they get back. And when I was literally at the door, my sister phoned. And the wife was saying, you know, he's leaving now. I really can't talk to you now. And she was like trying to talk, and it was, Glenn is leaving now. I can't talk to you now. And the husband, he literally had tears. I mean, he was so emotional. Of course, I said, you know, you're like my father. And he literally had tears in his eyes. And they had come up for my brother-in-law's birthday. So the next day was his birthday. So I phoned him and I told him what a nice meeting I had. And he was happy. You know, he thought it was great. He thought it was great. I don't know what to say about my sister. She's good. Yes, sibling rivalry. There's always things that always stuff, you know, that interferes. But it was fine. You know, it was fine. Hare Krishna. She's actually very good. She's done a lot of service.
Yes, you as your brother, she must have done something right.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir.
In the earlier part of your lecture, you mentioned that the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Haridas temple, he saw the Jagannath disposition. How should we understand the Jagannath?
I'll repeat the question so that others can hear. But he says that earlier in my talk I mentioned that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the temple, he saw Jagannath as Krishna. And so...
How can we understand Jagannath?
How can we understand Jagannath as Krishna? Well, Jagannath is Krishna. Like Prabhupada says, we see, I mean, an ordinary person will see a carving, a wood carving, and not very finely done, and, you know, and painted. It'd probably be called folk art, you know, not fine art. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the same thing and he fainted in ecstasy. So he was seeing something different. He was seeing Krishna. So really there's no difference. In fact, there's a beautiful line in a song by Vasudev Ghosh. Say Gaura, say Krishna, say Jagannath, something like that. The Jagannath is Krishna and is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Jagannath is a very special deity. I mean, of course, all the incarnations are included in Krishna. But Jagannath is known for revealing himself to the devotee in the form that the devotee approaches him or wants to see him. And there are stories of, like, devotees of Ganesh. They wanted to see Ganesh, or they wanted to see Lord Rama. And so sometimes the pujaris dress him. Sometimes you see, like, the elephant trunk as Ganesh, showing that all the demigods are included in Krishna, and all the other incarnations are included, like Rama. But he's Krishna. And there are different explanations why he looks like that. But the essence of it is that he's Krishna in the mood of separation. Jagannath Puri is a place of separation. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing us love for Krishna in the mood of separation. So he is in the mood of Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. That was his mood when he saw Jagannath. And Jagannath in Puri is sort of Krishna in the mood of Dwarkadish, in Dwarka, feeling separation from Radharani. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but feeling separation from Krishna. And Jagannath is Krishna, feeling separation from Radharani. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mode of Radharani. So it's a place of separation. And feelings of separation are very central to the mood of devotion of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's really when you feel separation that your devotional service or Krishna consciousness becomes accelerated. Because you need a goal. You know, unless your mind is fixed on a goal, it's very hard to make progress in any endeavor. You know, someone's mind is fixed on money, okay, got to make money. There's some attachment. So, when we have some attachment for Krishna, you know, or then we have impetus to work towards the goal. And that attachment takes the form of feelings of separation. Any other questions or comments? Trivida Prabhu.
One thing that is so interesting about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is that he, you know, he takes his role, he has his role of this, you know, very official head of the temple, chief magician, and it's almost like someone wrote a play, because he, you know, he's turned into, it's almost funny, you know, he's rolling on the ground, and he's beating his head out of his head. Oil cakes that all the oil has been taken out of, it was so dry. And, and there's some nice verses in Pagyabhavi where he says, who cares what they say about me? I don't care. I'm just going to roll around on the ground. I did my heart. taken by some mysterious boy in the dark, you know. So it's almost like he compensates the other way and becomes, you know, exactly opposite what he was. I don't know if you want to comment on that, but it's so a wonderful thing. Gopinath Acharya sees him, you know, it's really kind of a pretty, almost like a perfect, you know, arranged thing by Chaitanya.
As Jivita Prabhu says that the transformation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was so drastic that, you know, from being the chief officer of the temple and to, you know, just rolling on the ground in ecstasy and saying, I don't care what people think of me, and, you know, my heart has been stolen by a young cowherd boy, and so it's a very stark contrast. But we find the same thing in Madhavendra Puri. And he was never like a dry philosopher. But he also said the same thing, you know, that my, you know, friends called me illusioned, and, you know, they, you could probably quote that. Yeah, you know, basically different categories of people were seeing him as faulty in different ways. But he says, but I don't really care what any of them say or think, because I'm fixed in my determination to serve my Lord Krishna. So I think that's the mood of anyone who reaches the state of bhava, is in that. That famous verse about the chanting the holy name in ecstatic love, that he chants like a madman without caring what others think. So I think that's common, but the stark contrast between what he was before and what he became was so dramatic that it's wonderful. All right, thank you very much again. And now we will...